Good morning. Namaste. Swagat. Our awakened awareness, vast as infinite space, has never found itself holed up in anything. So there's nothing whatsoever that is occurring or happening within the non-dual expanse. To say that something occurs or happens within the non-dual expanse immediately takes a teaching of non-duality and makes it into a teaching of duality. So we're not going to start with that premise. We're not going to start with a dualistic premise and try to get to a non-dual premise. Rather, we're going to start with the non-dual premise of what a human being is. If we want to know what we are, then we have to start with what we are rather than see it as a goal. When it comes to our awareness that is vast as infinite space, it's not something that we need to achieve as a destination. It isn't something we need to effort for or get to or cause in some way. What is already accomplished cannot be caused. So even if it appears that there is a cause, that was not a cause. It already is. The cause is something that could be considered circumstantial. It exists only because of its label as a cause. But it has never affected anything because what always is already accomplished. And that vast expanse of infinite awareness is inclusive of everything. So everything that appears within it is only the dynamic energy of it and nothing else. There's nothing else that exists elsewhere other than this non-dual expanse, and any of the dynamic energy of that non-dual expanse never strays from it. So it's impossible that any of the dynamic energy of awakened awareness could ever be anything else. It never goes outside the borderlands, the non-existing borderlands of awakened awareness into another realm called duality. And even though everything that can be labeled, including duality, is included and contained within awakened awareness has never been confined within dualistic perception. So if we take ourselves to be someone who is confined within dualistic perception, it's like seeing a mirage and taking ourselves to be confined within the mirage. That would be impossible. It would be impossible for us to even get into a mirage. If we saw a mirage and we walked into it, by the time we got into it, it would disappear. So this is the case with all of our perceptions, any perception we may have, whether it's positive, negative, or neutral. No matter what the perception is, it is fundamentally pure, primordially pure. It is empty of any origin other than its essence as awakened awareness, and it is wholly positive as it has only ever existed as awakened awareness. So these three, the emptiness or the basic space, that would be another way to talk about it, the basic space of each perception is aware. It is naturally present, and in its natural presence, it is entirely pure, and it is responsive. Its responsiveness is the responsiveness of natural freedom. Every single perception already is free, thus it is wholly positive. So another way we could look at this in terms of our own human bodies and what goes on within them is any thought, emotion, or sensation we have, if we approach it and we say that it is whatever its label is, anger, sadness, happiness, joy, elation, grief, despair, bewilderment, hope, whatever it is, if we label something as its description, as its dictionary definition, all we will ever see is that label. That's all we'll know about it. But if we, like walking into the mirage, if we walk a little further, we will realize that there's nothing there, just like in a mirage. So in the essence of every perception, in the direct encounter with it, if we just rest naturally, allow the ease of our awakened awareness, then we know that perception as it is. We know that perception not only as its dictionary definition, but as its ultimate meaning, which is awakened awareness. So in that sense, each one of our perceptions is like a little infant. Like a tiny infant. Every single infant is, first of all, empty of any concepts. So no infant has any concepts. It doesn't have any points of view. It doesn't have any perceptions that it's attached to, nor does it have any perceptions that it considers an impediment. And an infant is so pure, so pure. We look at infants and we think purity. This is total purity. There's nothing else going on there but the pure essence of what a human being is. That's what we see in an infant. And when we look at an infant, we don't see anything negative about it. Oh, it's just the most holy, positive little creature. You know, this brand new human life, so entirely precious in every way. Well, this is the case with every one of our perceptions. Every one of our perceptions is like a precious infant. Whether it's a thought, whether it's an emotion, or whether it's a sensation of our bodies. But many of us have learned to fear our thoughts and our emotions and our sensations and to categorize them into those that are negative, neutral, and positive. And when we do that, we lose the freshness and the joy of the possibility of every single perception. When we do that, we force ourselves into being a subject who is objectifying everything going on in the body. In other words, the thoughts, emotions, and sensations, all our perceptions. We objectify all those. We decide that a lot of them are good and some of them are neutral. In fact, the large percentage are neutral. And then there are some that are negative. And we spend a lot of our lifetime working on the ones that are negative and trying to get them out of the barrel of the negative and into the barrel of the positive, or at least into the barrel of the neutral. But we want that barrel of the negative to be empty. And we're bound and determined to do that. So this is a convention. This is a convention of human existence. It's only a convention. It's a fiction elaborated over time about who a human being is. But throughout all of human history, humankind has evolved. And not only have we evolved in our physiology, but we have evolved in our consciousness as well. So our capacity to understand who we are as humankind has never been greater than it is now. In fact, we have all kinds of inventions now that our reality of being has not caught up with. We've made things that we just don't know what to do with them. Now, you know, we've made all this technology that is absolutely incredible. Communications technology that links everyone in the world. Transportation technology that links everyone in the world. We're all linked all over the world. Even the most remote people are linked up in some way. I have a friend who lives on a remote island in Fiji, and every day he telecasts all these things all over the world from his remote island in Fiji. You know, so no one is out of the loop anymore. Anyone who wants to be in the loop can be in the loop. And yet, though we have the capacity, this immense capacity of mind to invent all these things, we haven't brought all these inventions together in a way that can really serve humankind. We're on the brink of doing that, but we cannot do that as long as we take ourselves to be subjects who are constantly looking at objects and somehow trying to arrange them and control them. Because that entire lifestyle occurs within cause and effect. It occurs within the realm of causality. It occurs within time and space. And many of these technologies that we're inventing today, they didn't come out of time and space. They didn't come out of time and space. They came out of a stroke of brilliance of exalted mind. They didn't come out of the realm of cause and effect. And this propensity and capacity of human beings to invent is accelerating more than it ever has in human history. So that 100 years from now, we will know 500 times more than what we know now. Isn't that incredible? That's totally incredible. And we know 50 times more than we did 15 years ago. So, you know, this is amazing. We have at our fingertips all of this technology that we've invented that unites us everywhere. But we don't yet have the capacity as human beings to come together in a peaceful way to use all of this to some good end. We're still lost in a realm of cause and effect solutions to many of the problems of the world. We've mastered technology, internet technology, communication technology, transportation technology, but we have not mastered our technology of peacemaking. We have not mastered that at all. We're not even near mastery of that. Because all of our efforts of peacemaking, of environmental justice, of social justice, all of those are still within the realm of cause and effect, within the realm of time and space. They haven't reached the genius of some of the other technologies we have invented that have come out of pure space. The stroke of brilliance of people who are willing to move beyond anything they've ever known and take a risk for coming up with something new. This is very prevalent today. At no time in human history has it been more prevalent. And this opening that we see into exalted mind, into exalted awareness is very, very important, and it applies to every field of human life. The same kind of strength that is being drawn upon for brilliant inventions is the reality of every human being 24/7. So rather than it just being some kind of breakthrough from the beyond, it's the reality of what we are in every moment. So in this sense, every single one of our perceptions is our opportunity for invention. We can either invent that perception as something that is bound by cause and effect in time and space and continue to take ourselves to be a subject living in a world of objects, living in cause and effect, living in time and space, or we can use our tremendous capacity for invention that I just referred to totally break through the solidity of that perception, to cut through it, to rather than seeing it only through cause and effect, the dynamics of time and space, a worldview or paradigm that's entirely limited by the subject-object duality, we persist in our invention of the perception until we see that it's not only its description, but that its essence is only awakened awareness. And its description is only the dynamic energy of that awakened awareness. Now, this invention making and invention giving process is entirely up to us. So, you know, there's no one who can give it to us. Someone can directly introduce it to us, which is what this situation is about. This circumstance right here. It's the direct introduction to what we already are. It's not something that's going to exist down the line or lifetimes from now. It's already accomplished, already occurring, and already within the capacity of everyone right here. But we must be the ones who have the direct encounter with each perception, and in that direct encounter, realize that that perception is our own awakened awareness. And how do we realize that? A perception comes up, and rather than persisting in a story or elaboration about it, we just allow the ease of our being. We allow awareness, the awareness that is primary or most prevalent or constant in every perception. We allow that, and in allowing that, we realize a vivid wakefulness that is the essence of that perception. So the essence of every perception, no matter what it is this vivid wakefulness that is aware of the direct encounter with the perception. See, there would be no perception without the awareness. So that's its evidence to all of us scientific materialists here. That's its evidence that it is awareness. The perception would not be without the awareness. So you see, our awareness, our already awakened awareness, is the root of everything. If we persist in living within a dictionary, hopping around for our entire life from one word to another, trying to create meaning out of all the words in the dictionary, then that's all we'll see. We'll see all the words in the dictionary. When we die, those will be our companions. All the words in the dictionary will be our companions. I don't want that. You know, that sounds like a humdrum death to me and kind of scary. I don't want a bunch of words as my companions. Because, you know, when we go with us, we can't take anything. Did you know that? We can't take the clothes we're wearing or the kind of hairdo we've decided to have. We can't take any of our best ideas about living life. We can't take our bank account or any money, how great or small we might have. None of our family members can go with us, so none of these people can go along. If we have a teacher or a guru, they're not going to be coming with us. You know, they're probably not going to even be there when we die. So, you know, what else? Well, you know, we're not going to be able to take any good things to eat, so we're not going to be able to count on that anymore. We're not going to have a bag of cookies we can take along when we die, or anything else that may have comforted us when we're alive. And, you know, so all that we have when we die is awareness. That's what we take with us. You know, our last perception is this perception of the body. That's the last one that goes. And even though when we have trained ourselves to live as awakened awareness during our lifetime, that perception of the body, it doesn't seem so tight. You see, if we've never known that the perception of the body is just a fleeting appearance that leaves no trace, like the flight path of a bird in the sky, then when we die, we're going to think the body really is something important to us, and that we're going to have to cling to it with everything we've got. We're just going to have to hang on as much as we can in order to not let it go, because what's beyond that? The unfamiliar. But you see, in each one of these perceptions that is our own invention, we have the opportunity to realize the relief in that that will then be present with us at our death. And if we don't introduce ourselves to this now and more allow the evidence of that to be obvious in our life, when we reach our death, then it just won't be there. You know, it's unlikely that it will be available to us. It might be, but, you know, those are pretty long odds to say it might be. Those are very long odds to say it might be. And so, you know, sometimes, especially these days when we can Google enlightenment or awakening and find out all kinds of things about it, we have so many ideas about what awakening and enlightenment are. They're endless. So not only do we have all these other points of view or perceptions, but now we have hundreds or thousands of often unnecessary perceptions about awakening. We're going after this link. Oh, that link looks good. I think I'll click through to that and see what kind of enlightenment's there, or over here, or over there. Well, you know, most of these are just dead ends. They're really dead ends. You'll get 404 URL not available, or you'll start to read something about some bizarre thing you never wanted to look at in the first place. So, you know, there are a lot of dead ends. There are a lot of dead ends in awakening. And many of the dead ends are different states we can enter into. So, you know, if we take awakening to be something, then that's a dead end. For example, if we take awakening to be a fixed description or frame of reference or context, like emptiness, we've decided awakening is emptiness, or we've decided it is a non-conceptual framework, or we've decided it means no thought, or we've decided it means no self, or nothingness, or voidness, or even bliss or clarity. If we've decided any of these things about what enlightenment is, we've adopted a frame of reference or a context. And what do we know about a frame of reference or a context? It's a perception. So it's just like any other perception. It's equal to cat or dog, you know. So if we try to hold on to a state of emptiness or something like that, that won't be with us either when we die, because we're not a state. We're not a state. We're the living reality of awakened awareness that's never been anything. So it's never been anything. Even the best definition of emptiness or no thought or no self, it's never been any of those things. Timeless freedom is originally pure and timelessly free. It's never needed anything to describe it to make it what it is. So, you know, when we rest naturally without seeking anything is the ease of every single one of our perceptions, then we realize that this perception, it's always only been awareness and nothing else. And at first it may be difficult for us to do that. It may be a real challenge because maybe we've lived our whole life, even our spiritual life, trying to divide up all the points of view into positive, negative, and neutral. And so even if we've lived an intensely spiritual life and we've neutralized many of our perceptions, at some point we're going to have to realize that all the neutral and the negative perceptions as well, what we've labeled to be negative and neutral, that they're also timelessly free. They're also primordially pure. Without that, we can never be free. You see, as long as we think that there are negative points of view or perceptions that are of a concern to the matter of awakening, we can't be free of those perceptions. And freedom from those perceptions rarely comes about through clobbering them over the head repetitively. In fact, it never comes about through that. It might seem like it did, but what always is never comes about. Do you see what I'm saying? What always is never comes about. It already is. It's already accomplished, already real, already naturally present. Doesn't need to be sought after or grasped. So most importantly, we need to stop seeking. We need to realize that there's nothing that need be done. There's nothing that need be thought, and there's nothing that need be said as an objective support to prove who we are. We don't need to prove who we are. We know who we are. And our direct evidence of who we are is our freedom and immediate perception. At first, it may seem that there's someone who's getting free in each perception, but we don't even have to worry about that perception of a someone getting free of an object that is a perception. We don't have to worry about that seeming someone at all, because the more that we rest naturally, the more that we allow the ease of our being, the more we will understand that personal identity in its completeness without having to get rid of the personal identity and move into the hotel of emptiness or no self. And, you know, because the personal identity and awakened awareness are not two. They're not two. We don't need to get rid of a personal identity because it never was. So why would we spend time trying to get rid of something that never was in the first place? You see, when we just rest naturally, when we allow the ease of our being or whatever you want to call it, we realize that we rarely perceive ourselves as a personal somebody. We're not sitting around all the time saying, I'm somebody, I'm somebody, I'm somebody, and that's how I know it. Most of the time we're just free-flowing awakened awareness, and then once in a while there's the perception of being somebody. When there is that perception of being somebody, it's only the dynamic energy of awareness. It's not separate from it. And the dynamic energy of awareness isn't a little thing. It isn't something. It's pervasive of all of awareness. So you see, there's no awakening that's separate or apart from a perception. Do you understand what I'm saying? There is no awakening or enlightenment whatsoever that is separate or apart from perception. This is very important to realize. There's no awakening or enlightenment, liberation, timeless freedom of any kind that is separate or apart from perception. It only seems that there is because we've been living within a dualistic framework, within a framework of cause and effect. Where is this already accomplished enlightenment, you might wonder? You know, where does it live? Can I find the house where it lives, knock on the door, walk in, and just be it? Yes, you can. Every perception. that's the house of awakened awareness. Every single perception, there, including the perception of being somebody. So you don't have to go somewhere to get it. You don't have to go to India or Tibet or China or Vietnam or Thailand or anywhere else that you might think awakened awareness may be living. Because you see, wherever you go, there you are. And the only reason any of it is because of your own awareness. So, you know, I'm one of your best imaginings right here. That's all. That's all that's going on here. Everything, no matter what it is rooted in our awareness. And I don't know, you may wonder, you may not, how does this apply to practical life? How does all this apply to practical life? Well, when we take ourselves to be somebody who's based on all the descriptions in the dictionary, then our body, speech, and mind are very limited. They're limited to anything that can be described by all the definitions in the dictionary. That's all that we know about our body, speech, and mind. We think our body, speech, and mind is within the skin line. It's within the framework of the body, and that's our context for body, speech, and mind. It's in here. And that this body, speech, and mind, we have to control it all the time because it's out to get us, whoever that us is. You know, it's out to get us. Our sensations, some of those are a little scary, so we have to keep those under control. Our thoughts, some of those are a little scary. We have to keep those under control. And our emotions, a lot of those are scary too, so we have to keep those under control. So all of what we perceive to be our body, speech, and mind is channeled into that activity. It's all of our awareness is channeled into that activity, the activity of controlling all our perceptions. And how is that distinct from awakened awareness and the exalted body, speech, and mind of awakened awareness? When we get to know our perceptions as they really are, already accomplished awakened awareness, timelessly free and originally pure, when we get to know each one of our perceptions as that, we relax. We completely relax. We find an ease of being we didn't have when we were all whipped up into controlling all of these things going on here. And as we relax, we find something amazing occurring. Our awareness, rather than being trapped in this prison called the body, could people who have pagers and cell phones on please turn them off? Thank you. We find that we're not trapped within a body after all, that the relaxation of the ease of our being, this awakened awareness that we're discovering in our reinvention of every perception, is also timelessly free. Our body, speech, and mind are timelessly free. We find, much to our amazement, that rather than our body, speech, and mind being trapped and confined into a subjective existence, that it's always been mingled and blended as the vast expanse of infinite space, the vast expanse of awareness. And so, you know, this is amazing. It's truly amazing, yet it's the reality, the ordinary reality of what everyone is. And we can't possibly know anything about it other than as a fluke breakthrough that is momentary, unless we realize this freedom in immediate perception. This freedom in immediate perception automatically leads to just aware basic space, knowing ourselves as aware basic space. And that aware basic space, rather than being an inert void or something, a place we'd never want to hang out, in other words. Well, maybe someone would want to hang out in an inert void, but not this one. But rather than it being an inert void, the more that we realize that each one of our perceptions has always been totally free, the more we just relax all these control dynamics of our own being. And as we do, we find a warmth of compassion that arises, a warmth of compassion, wisdom, and love, and bliss. This naturally arises because it's the natural state of our being. We just can't recognize it as long as we're all whipped up into a foment about everything going on, our thoughts, our emotions, and our sensations, and trying to categorize them all. So it's in allowing this relentless compassion for ourselves, in which we just allow every perception to be the timeless freedom it already is. It's in realizing that that we also realize its inseparability from compassion, wisdom, love, the benefit for the whole. So you see, these are inherent. These are inherent. Compassion, wisdom, benefit for the whole, love. These are inherent. They're our natural state, inseparable from our already awakened awareness. They do not have to be developed or cultivated. They're already present. And when we realize the essence of our being that is beyond cause and effect, the reality of every perception, then we realize this compassion, it's already here. First, we realize that it is immense compassion for ourselves. We've put ourselves through this boot camp, this obstacle course of decades of trying to control everything about ourselves. You know, it's endless work. Have you noticed that? Wow, and the books you have to buy. Wow, that eats up a lot of the cash, you know. If we put together all the money spent on self-help books and books about awakening, we could feed the people of the world, you know. You know, the reality of what we are, when we realize this compassion for ourselves that's just based on seeing what we put ourselves through. In other words, we get totally in touch in a very deeply felt personal way with our own suffering, not as some kind of philosophical overlay. And I'll give you the distinction between the two. A philosophical overlay is an antidote or a band-aid that says something that applies to all people. We then try to apply it to our intellect and have some kind of salve, balm, or relief from it. So a philosophical overlay is that there is suffering, and the antidote is that there's an end to suffering. So the philosophical overlay of it, there is an end to that there is suffering. Well, we already know that. You know, we know that. But it's a philosophical overlay until we get in touch with our own personal suffering. Unless we know the personal suffering that we've caused ourselves with our own thoughts, emotions, and sensations, and taking them to be something other than awakened awareness. Unless we know that personal suffering that we've caused ourselves, we can't possibly open the floodgates of awakening or compassion. Not either one. Because we'll still be lost within a realm of cause and effect. So we have to come deeply in touch with that. And that's the distinction between a philosophical overlay or band-aid and really knowing what this statement, there is suffering, means. To know what there is suffering means, we have to know our own suffering totally and completely. It doesn't matter where we live or what we've done. We could have lived in a monastery all of our lives from the time we're 5 years old. Or we could have been living in Bakersfield, California, eating at McDonald's every day for all of our life and working there too. You know, it doesn't matter where we are. At some point, in order to get in touch with who we really are, we have to come face to face with the nature of our own suffering. It's impossible to wake up without that. So anything that suggests otherwise is only a balm. It's just another antidote. It's only an anomaly of point of view. It may not be the conventional point of view. It may not be what most people are doing, but it's still within the realm of cause and effect, within the realm of time and space. None of these props are needed. So, you know, it's really important for us to get in touch with our own suffering. Most of us have no idea how to do that. There's so much suffering that to confront it just seems overwhelming. It seems totally impossible. How do we possibly even know what our suffering is? How do we know what not only our own personal suffering is, but how much of that is imposed on us by the belief systems of culture? You know, anything we think is opposed, we willingly adopt. We willingly adopt that. So we've never been a victim of any perception, not even institutions, culture, including the culture of enlightenment. We've never been a victim of any of these things. All of these perceptions, no matter what they are, only perceptions. So, you know, one of the purposes of the Great Freedom Teaching is to allow people to have a context to come totally in touch with their personal suffering, not as a philosophical overlay, but as something so real, so lived, so vivid that it can't be missed. And in coming in touch with that, it opens up a compassion that's never even been imaginable before. Never imaginable before. And you see, that compassion is inseparable from waking up. So these happen simultaneously. They happen simultaneously. The investigation in a totally loving way of our own suffering and realizing that it's always only been awakened awareness. And the opening up of awakening, the opening up of pure awareness, the opening up of compassion. These two are not separate. These two are not separate. Total liberation, timeless freedom, is not separate or apart from suffering. Suffering and awakened awareness are not two. And unless we know the nature of our own personal suffering, not just as some general thing that applies to everybody, it will be very difficult for us to ever be totally free. So, you know, no matter where we're living, we face this suffering. We can only mitigate it to a certain degree through any kind of practice, whether it's eating hamburgers or engaging in austerities. You know, we might be able to neutralize our suffering through either of those. Those are extremes, right? Austerities and, well, eating hamburgers, that's kind of an extreme too. But I think you understand what I'm saying. So you see, we can only mitigate it to a certain degree. We can't really end it. We can only end it, boom, bring it to a complete stop, when we just allow the pure space of every perception to be the case. And we can only do that in coming face to face, the direct encounter with our own suffering. There's no other way. Even though we always hope there's another way. Oh, you know. But you know, most of us don't want to face our own suffering because we've never been shown how to do that. We've really never been shown how to do that. We've never been shown A, B, C, D, E. This is how you come face to face with your own suffering. This is what all the points of view are that are part of your own system of pet points of view. And this is how those points of view have caused you suffering and caused suffering in your relationships. And then, you know, what are the belief systems and assumptions that have ruled us and caused us suffering? You know, like ideas of gender, socioeconomic status, caste, any of these things. Our religious and spiritual belief systems, how have those caused us suffering? You know, unless we look clearly at those things, we can never see our own suffering. And these two are together. They're inseparable. Seeing that suffering and waking up, they're totally inseparable. So, you know, if we're trying to foist suffering out of the picture through a lot of practices, none of them will work unless we're resting naturally while we're doing the practices, and we're just allowing the free flow of whatever the perceptions are. Nothing need be done about the perceptions. They're their own undoing. You see, there's nothing separate from awakened awareness. The dynamic energy of awakened awareness is its own undoing. Nothing has to be done about it. We don't need to clobber it over the head or eat a chocolate cake over it or anything else, you know. Whatever it is, it's its own undoing. And we can only see that if we rest as the vivid wakefulness that's the reality of every perception. If we don't have that rest, that ease of being, that allowance in every single perception, then we can never possibly realize that. So you see, it's not dependent on circumstance. No matter where we're living or how we've been living our life, we have to come face to face with our own suffering. And here in the Great Freedom Teaching, there's a way that's set out to do that, that's very beautiful, easeful, and gentle, and it's quick. In other words, it's not, you don't have to wait for lifetimes to wake up. You see, the moment you start to get in touch with the immensity of your own suffering, immediately awakening becomes more and more obvious. That's just the way it is. So the direct introduction to who we are is what's most obvious right here. That's the beginning point. That's the starting point. When we come face to face with the reality of what we are in such a direct way, and how taking all our perceptions to be something real has affected us, then we feel bittersweetness. Bittersweetness. You know, we feel sad, intensely compassionate, maybe some grief for everything we've put ourselves through. And then as we realize that about us, we realize that about everyone. We're not just realizing about us. You see, this compassion, it has no separation. So instantaneously, we're realizing that everyone suffers. Through really coming in touch with the depth of our own suffering, then we realize how much everyone suffers. No longer is it a philosophical overlay, there is suffering or everyone suffers. We deeply know it. We know it so personally, so inseparably, but we know it as aware basic space. You see, we're not knowing it as a personal somebody. We're knowing it as awakened awareness, and this just happens automatically. It happens automatically. It doesn't require some kind of heroic endeavor that is for some kind of system of elect beings. All beings are elect. Everything is awakened awareness. Every perception is elect. Every perception is elect. In this critical juncture, this crucial time in human history, is that we have to realize this now. You know, we have to realize that this that we are is already accomplished. And then each of us must take a stand for ourselves as that, rather than continuing to persist lost in a world of labels. It's like being lost in dictionary.com for your entire life. Just running around from page to page. Countless pages and more coming every day. No one would want to do that. Lost in the space of dictionary.com. So, you know, when we simply allow the ease of our being, this natural rest that is already the case in every perception, we more and more taste this reality of pure space. And rather than tasting it as something other than us, we taste it as us. It is who we are. It's not only who we are as a personal somebody, but it's the totality of what we are, the vastness of what we are. This exalted body, speech, and mind that is entirely compassionate, wise, of benefit to the whole. All learning is already included and contained within it. And then from that vantage, we live our life. We live our life from the vantage of not having to adopt any extremes or frames of reference about anything. And when we live our life without adopting extremes or frames of reference about anything, then we see in a very practical way all kinds of solutions to problems in our own life, to problems in our families, community, and world, because we have no frame of reference. We no longer need to be within the solution-making capacities of cause and effect in time and space. The reality is that we're beyond causality. We include cause and effect in time and space, but cause and effect, time and space is not our true identity. When we rest as the master of awareness, the master of all, then great solutions come into being that couldn't have possibly been seen before. So this is the crucial juncture for humankind at this point. You know, in all fields, no matter what they are, this is equally true in religion, spirituality, philosophy, medicine, teaching, healthcare, whatever we might name. We need solutions in all of these areas that support this global human culture that is now united together. We need things that not only serve specific cultures, but serve global culture altogether, because these specific cultures are becoming more and more diffuse. You know, many of the cultural boundaries are slipping away, and more we're seeing ourselves as a global human culture. So we see solutions that can serve this global human culture when we allow ourselves to be that which is beyond causality. We can't see those as long as we're still wrapped up in cause and effect. We might have a fluke breakthrough here and there, but that's all it'll be. So, you know, it's really up to us. It's really up to us. For example, when it comes to the culture of enlightenment, until now in human history, the culture of enlightenment has been within the confines of conventional cultural norms. So the entire culture of enlightenment grew up, so to speak, within cultures throughout the world that were severely restricted by the means of communication and by transportation. So all of these teachings that were developed to serve specific cultural contexts that were limited in their forms of communication and transportation. Most people never traveled more than 25 miles from where they lived. So everything about their life occurred there. And many of the great traditions and great teachings, in fact, all of the direct teachings began as oral traditions. So when I talk about direct teachings, I talk about the circumstance that's going on in this room, where everything that's heard is about the truth as immediate and available through direct perception. All of these began as oral traditions that were passed down from generation to generation, where no one knew how to read or write. And so, you know, reading and writing and all of that, that's only been a recent invention. That's only been a recent mode of communication in human history. So, you know, now, and then reading and writing, that just sort of chugged along in a linear way until about 10 years ago, really, when the internet began to become prevalent and electronic documents started to become widely prevalent. And so, you know, anything written down about any of these teachings, first of all, one had to study for a long time before ever writing it down, because you had to be so sure about what you were going to say because it could never be changed. You know, if you're writing on a palm leaf with mushroom dye, you want to be very clear about what you're going to say when you write it down. And so people would study something like Sanskrit, as an example, for 10 to 18 years before writing a single word of an oral tradition on a palm leaf. And you know, of all these palm leaves everywhere, only 5% of them have been translated into English. So who knows what's out there? Or take Tibet for example. A liturgy so rich, so profound, the pinnacle teachings of Tibetan Buddhism, Adi Yoga, Dzogchen, that, you know, there are so many tantras or sutras, there are probably less than 0.1% that have been translated into English. So you see, we have this wealth of information, but none of it's readily available right now, and much of it needs to be translated. But, you know, we do have key things that are available to us, and many of those are available to us as we are. So they're already available within our awakened awareness. The reality of what they are is already available within our awakened awareness. Right now, at this point in human history, because we are so connected all over the globe, the time has come to shatter these confines of enlightenment culture and have an enlightenment culture that applies to everyone. You know, we can then still practice it in our own way, but as a human culture, we'll have a baseline or a definitive practice, the practice of timeless freedom. Because you see, timeless freedom, it's not constrained by anything. It doesn't matter where you live. You can live in a Tibetan monastery or a Hindu ashram, or you can live in a Catholic monastery or a tribal culture, wherever it is. It doesn't matter where you live. You can continue to enjoy the rituals of your own culture and be timelessly free at the same time. But you see, when we share this so directly with each other throughout global human culture, and we create from the grassroots up a global culture for the mutual support of enlightenment or awakening, then we shatter these confines of enlightenment culture that seem to be holed up in all these specific pockets throughout the world. We allow what really, the lineage that all of these teachings really belongs to is humankind. That's the lineage. That's the lineage that the teachings belong to. So as long as we take the teachings to be owned by a certain lineage, then they're not available to everyone. And there are all kinds of rules about getting the teachings. This can't be the case anymore, not at this critical juncture. We have to open our doors, no matter who we are. The Great Freedom Teaching, Hindu ashrams, Tibetan monasteries, throw open our doors with incredible openness and say, you know, welcome everyone. You know, we want to see what applies to all of global human culture. We want everyone to be connected. We don't need to be holed up in our own idea of anything anymore. You know, this is really what timeless freedom is. All ideas about everything go. All conventions, no matter how much we've been wrapped up in a frame of reference or a convention, like a particular monastery, ashram, teaching, setting, corporation, wherever it is we've been living our life, all conventions go. You know, we no longer live within the nine dots. We're not living within a box anymore. So even if we're a great lama or a great guru or whatever we are, there are no conventions. There are absolutely no conventions. And at some point, we move beyond all these conventions. This is what timeless freedom is. And when we really move beyond conventions, then we see that it is time. You know, it is time for a teaching that serves global humankind. We really have to come together on this, all of it, all of us, because, you know, of all the institutions in the world, the culture of enlightenment, for example, is the most gender biased. It's the most gender biased of all the world institutions. Isn't that amazing? And wherever there is such extreme gender bias, there is a diminishment of both genders. So both genders are incapable of thriving So, you know, I just say, drop all the conventions right here. Leave them all right here. I'll take them all. You can leave every one of them right here. And never turn back. Just come to a complete stop, because, you know, everything you know, you already know. You're already timelessly free. Already completely timelessly free. You've never needed any convention to prop you up. And I'm not suggesting, you know, anything like burn all the books or anything else. No extremes. We all can enjoy the circumstances we enjoy, whatever they may be. Yet be timelessly free and support everyone everywhere in the direct perception of awakened awareness. Support everyone everywhere in that. The most direct teachings, the teachings that have been reserved only for the elect after many, many years of doing whatever has gone on, you know, practices, rituals, whatever it is. The preliminary practices today are getting in touch with our own suffering. In a very direct way, a detailed way to come in touch with our own suffering. Once one does that, no other preliminary practices are needed. No other preliminary practices are needed. Anyone who ever walks through the door of an ashram or monastic life, I love to talk about this because I've always been so drawn to it. It's just so beautiful. It's so totally beautiful. Anyone who walks through the door of any of these settings should at first be totally in touch with their own suffering. No one should go in there with the suffering. So every kind of setting like this everywhere in the beginning should offer this beautiful, beautiful gift, this beautiful bouquet of the direct experience of awareness when someone walks in the door. You know, this direct experience of awareness that can only come about through the inseparability of suffering and total liberation. So, you know, one of the great things is that that is available. So it's available through the Great Freedom Teaching. I'm not talking about something we need to do. You know how we always hear these futuristic pronouncements about what we need to do to make the earth better and to be a better human being, and someone saying, oh yeah, we've got to do that. But no one's ever done it. There are so many books about that. Well, you know, in the Great Freedom Teaching, that is offered. It's directly available from the beginning. So thank you so much for being here today. And if anyone has a question, please ask it. And if anyone would like to come up and share about living as awareness, we'd love to hear about that too.
I have a question.
Yes.
yesterday, you spoke about how when a person becomes awakened, they realize that what they conceived awakening to be was wrong, basically. And that it's the same for everyone when they reach that awakened reality. Could you say a little bit about what the misconceptions are, what the typical misconceptions are, and also what awakened awareness isn't?
Uh-huh. Well, the extremes are what awakened awareness isn't. So all of the extremes I mentioned earlier, and there's a CD on the topic, by the way. It's called What Enlightenment Is Not, and another CD, What Enlightenment Is. So all the extremes I mentioned earlier, emptiness, no self, no thought, all of those extremes I mentioned earlier, plus freedom from mental concepts. Freedom from mental concepts is not awakening. And today there are many books written about it that say that that's what awakening or enlightenment is, but that is not awakening or enlightenment. Awakening or enlightenment is also not a kind of teaching that says everything is consciousness and everything is a spontaneous functioning of consciousness, so it doesn't matter what you do. That's also not awakening. We have a great tradition of awakening in human history, and it's been passed down lovingly from generation to generation. These direct teachings of the direct perception of mind or the direct perception of awareness. And the teachings always say exactly the same thing, that it's inseparable from the awakening of compassionate benefit for the whole. So that's what real awakening is in a nutshell. If you'd like to hear the 1.5 hour version of each, the CDs are available. I think they're both right over there on the table.
Why do so many realized beings seem to display what I would term as ordinary awareness? And I'll give a couple of examples. I walked into a room a few weeks ago of a great saint, and he looked up at me as if he was quite surprised or startled. Another example would be Paramhansa Yogananda at Convocation in 1948. He was trying to look for someone in the audience, a friend, and he didn't know that friend was in the audience, so he just said, "Such and such, are you here?" So quite ordinary instances. And the other day I noticed you knocked something over. And I can't quite square this. It's a fundamental misunderstanding that I have.
That's right.
Because they talk about omniscience and awareness that transcends the body, and yet we have these demonstrations. So I admit I don't understand.
Well, that's a good thing that you've said right there. I don't understand. So that would be a good starting point. I don't know what anything is in relation to all those things you just mentioned. Because see, one of the ways that we get totally lost in our perceptions is all these things we know about awakening and all the great beings and this, that, and the other thing. Well, I'll tell you this. If Paramahansa Yogananda read a book about him, he would just shudder. And this is true about most great beings. I only know of one tradition where there has been intense focus on spiritual biographies that are very precise and handing those down from generation to generation over a long period of time so that we really know what occurred in the lives of the masters, and that is Dzogchen. So you see, these other things, these are just books about somebody. We never have any idea what's going on with anyone. So, you know, the only way you can come to understand what's going on with me is to come to terms with understanding yourself, to keep the focus entirely on yourself and your own awakened awareness. When you get lost in all of these elaborations about all the great ones who have ever lived, just rest, and it's not necessary. Know yourself as the great one. All the great ones who have ever lived are the same living evidence, the full evidence of awakened awareness. All awakened beings, truly authentic awakened beings, are that. That's all they are, and that's all you are. So why not get to know yourself as that rather than endlessly speculating about everybody else? You know, and especially focusing on the nuance of this one and that one. Know that as yourself, and you'll know all of this, no matter what it is. You never know. I'll tell you one thing about any great one. Every single thing that occurs is purposeful. So a good way for you to hold that is that anything a great one does is a teaching. Every single thing a great one does is a teaching. There is not one movement that is not a teaching. And the same is true about you. Every single thing you do is a teaching. There's nothing going on with you that is not a teaching. For example, you know, there's all of this talk today about impartiality and neutrality and consciousness, everything happens spontaneously, awareness, freedom from mental concepts, all this that's taken to be awakening. This total impartiality, neutrality, I call it passive irresponsibility. And I had a visit at Great Freedom Sanctuary, where I live part of the time in California, from Wangdor Rinpoche, who is a Tibetan High Lama and a friend of mine, just a totally beautiful and magnificent being. If I had ever had a guru, he would have been my guru. When I met him, I already knew who I was. But, you know, just this old man who is just so profoundly beautiful and rich of being. So we were walking around the garden at the Great Freedom Sanctuary. And he gave me this locket, by the way. And we were looking at everything there, and we have these little offices built out on the back of the property. And he looked at those and he said, "Oh, these would be nice retreat huts." And then we walked some more through the garden, and the garden is quite large and it's very developed and very beautiful. And we looked at everything, and we reached one tree, and he just looked at it and he said, "I really like this tree." And you know, so what's the teaching in that, Glenn? That the reality of our being is not impartial. It's not neutral. When we wake up, it doesn't mean we have to act in a certain way. If we had to act in a certain way, that would be artifice or pretense. It wouldn't be timeless freedom. We don't have to act in any specific way to prove we're awake. We don't have to talk in any certain way to prove we're awake. We don't have to constantly be doing like this non-dual one-upping of everybody. When somebody says something like, I'll see you another time, and then the next person says, "It's not in time." You know, that is artifice or pretense. That's artifice or pretense. Our natural freedom is completely free. You know, we're natural, total love with each other. Total love, that's all we care about. So you see, his teaching in that moment was that, you know, that impartiality and neutrality is a frame of reference. It's a context. It's a point of concern for that which has no concern. So, you know, whatever is, it is as it is. This is very important. Everything is a teaching. No matter what perception arises, it is a direct teaching of enlightenment. It is enlightened intent. Its only intent is enlightenment. So this is another way to look at our perception. It's a little infant that's trying to enlighten us. The reality of what we are is completely natural. So it's just so natural. It doesn't need to be made into such a big deal or a big ordeal or crisis.
I'd like to share.
Oh, sure, Jerome.
Yeah, I'd like to share again, second time, maybe few of me before here, but I'd like to share because it was so valuable for me to the first time when I came in to have other people sitting here like Adrian and Petra and more, which I would call normal human beings, regular like me, and living from awareness in such a relaxed way, then I thought, wow, this really could be for me too. Well, and then slowly became, I can live like that too. And that was such a homecomer or call of the searcher, which I thought I did before, but then I really profoundly felt that. And each day I come here, it's getting deeper and more and more, and I'm a little bit like the dimmer switch. I'm going very gradual, so every day it's a little bit more turning up the light, so to say. And just a month and a half ago, I would be in my pinball machine, Flipper Cast, and that is just living from point of view with every little light and spring and elastic and loop would be all kind of thought loops and jumping and flippering and from one side to the other, and I would be just sometimes really lost in that and desperate and angry, sometimes happy when I won the jackpot, but that was just temporary. And now I suddenly see it's a game over. These lights are flickering. I said, "You really won the jackpot now." I was always really looking for. Well, I knew there was something. I knew for such a long time, very, very sure that there was something, and I always put it outside of myself. Reading all these books and doing yoga for 8 years and 9 years now, and really hoping to find something in that, and expecting it too, but it never happened. And I still like to do yoga, but it's in a very different way, just to keep in a good flexible condition, which is still good for maybe mind or movement and everything, but not being anymore in this pinball machine, it gives me so much rest. And a nice example of it yesterday afternoon, out of the blue another Westerner became very, very angry at me, I normally would get into it and kind of fight with it mentally and verbally, and I really asked him why are you doing this, why and he was only shouting, and my heartbeat was going faster, and then my thoughts were going like, wow, how can you be so arrogant, and is this compassion and whatever, but I didn't do it. I just was quiet. Just sat down there in the atmosphere. He was quiet too, and it was in the air like crispy tension, and I just sat there, look at him, and well, slowly in a way, we start talking again, and it just dissolved. And we had a very nice conversation. And now I see him every day. Hey, how are you? And we're going to see each other again, even in the future. So that's something like with my mother too, or with my girlfriend, which sometimes went quite difficult, and now suddenly it all just out of itself naturally disappears. Mm-hmm. This is incredible. It's just, I don't have to do anything. Actually, do nothing. So that's what I'd like to share.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Candice. I feel so much love, it's inexpressible, but seeing all these beautiful people in front of me, I cannot do anything else than love every one of you. Mm-hmm.